Snoop.
Hey.
Look, are we doing this? Look, I'm full of smothered and covered hash browns and coffee. Let's get into this. I'm ready. I'm jazzed, as the young people say.
Last week you were full of Steak and Shake. Yeah. Is that your routine now?
I don't have a healthy diet, but
well, as long as you're exercising, Sean, getting a good run in there in between all those hash browns.
No.
Oh. Well, I'm sure you'll be fine. Ready to start the show, though.
The only thing I run is my mouth. Am I right? Let's do this.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Unnecessary Gentleman podcast, where I, Snoop Lynch, and my co-host, Sean Doyle.
Hello.
That's him right there. Well, together, we talk about movies, comics, TVs. I don't think I have video game news this week. I'll make time for it, though, Sean. Don't worry.
We don't have time, Snoop. We're on a
bit of a tight schedule.
We don't have time to really get into stuff.
Yeah, but we're going to get into something. Yes. So what news should we get into?
I don't know. What you got?
I've got a couple things here. Some quick odd news. You know, DC's just making movies left and right now. They're really committed to that. That fun, every different movie's a different world, different character DC thing they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of those they're working on is the Joker movie. Not to be confused with Jared Leto's Joker movie, but this is the new Joker movie that's separate with Joaquin Phoenix. And there's going to be other characters in that, as you know. We were supposed to get a Thomas Wayne. We found out recently that it was going to be Alec Baldwin
for five seconds,
and now it's not going to be Alec Baldwin. It really wasn't just like 2 days he dropped out. So
I don't even think it was that. It was like a day, maybe.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Did you think he thought he was going to be Batman? He saw Wayne in the title, and he's like, yes.
Nah, he would know. It's, I don't know, maybe it was just like, this is the Martin Scorsese one.
Yeah. It's produced by Scorsese, okay, but it's being directed by Todd Phillips, who made the Hangover movies.
Gross. So he probably saw some of the names attached to it and got excited for like 5 minutes, and he was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. I guess this does, one thing this does tell us, though, is that as far as right now, Thomas Wayne is going to be in this movie, which is unnecessary, maybe? I don't really know what they would do with a Thomas Wayne in a Joker movie.
From what little we know, they're pulling from The Killing Joke a lot, and Batman's parents aren't in that story.
Batman's in that story, but not in the flashback stuff, which is what they're going to be focusing on in this movie.
Yeah, just for Joker. Is Batman even going to be in this movie, like, at all?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay, so
You know what? We may have talked about this before, but I figure the most they would do with a Batman is keep it more, almost not even need an actual actor man in there, like just use shadows and light to make Batman like a force of
nature.
You know
what I would do? The scene where at the Ace Chemical plants where he gets knocked in.
Yeah.
That's the only time I'd show Batman.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. But only do that with, you obviously need someone to stand in there and wear the costume, but use lighting and shadow to, we never see a face, we never hear a voice. It's just a scary shadow Batman figure. Get the phone out of here, Sean. I hear that feedback, and I don't want any part of it.
That's the only way I can get news.
It's fun.
News.
You could do it for the news section. Just hold it far away, and then when we're done with the news section, immediately chuck it.
Okay, I'll throw it against your wall.
Easily. Make sure it's broken. But yeah, I think there's interesting stuff to be done with this movie. I like that it's being kept on a really low budget of like $50, $60 million. Joaquin Phoenix is going to be the Joker as of right now. I think it's pretty great choice, especially after seeing him in that one movie, We Were Never Really Here, or
You Were Never Really Here.
Someone Was Never Really There. He's great in that, and that character reminds me a lot of a really unhinged Joker-esque kind of guy. Plus, he gets to do bad stand-up at some point, so I'm really looking forward to that. But yeah, just having, I don't really think you need that many other famous Bat characters in this movie. Like, I don't really think you need a Thomas and a Martha Wayne. Maybe, I guess, if they're just kind of in a scene, like they're walking down the street one day, joking about how, like, we'll never go down Crime Alley.
I was about to say, please don't do the Crime Alley stuff.
We've seen it so much.
And plus, I hate, that's one thing I hate from the 89 Batman is Joker being the one to kill his parents.
Yeah, I really hope they don't do that, because that's just in that movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess at the time it would have been, like, it's kind of cool to add something like that in there, but it hasn't aged well for me.
The name they give Joker in The Killing Joke, Jack Napier, Alan Moore came up with that name, and they use that same name in the 89 Batman movie.
Yeah, okay.
Where he's Jack Napier before he turns into the Joker.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, I know the whole thing about the Joker and his origin is that it's kind of, it varies, and what we hear might not even be real, but that's the one that's always kind of stuck around in comics since it happened. Because that originally, The Killing Joke was originally an Elseworlds tale, but they kind of mixed it in the main continuity.
Yeah, I think in the originally it was meant to be like an annual, because it's about the length of an annual. It's 50 pages long, more or less. And I don't think it was meant to be canon, or at least Alan Moore didn't consider it canon, and then it became really popular. You've read that comic, haven't you?
It
takes 5 minutes to read.
Yeah, it's good.
That's why it's, you got to be careful adapting it. That's what happened with that animated movie. So there's just not that much there.
Yeah, what's weird about the animated film is, and they've done this since then where, okay, this comic's only like you said, like 50, 60 pages. It takes a second to get through. Let's add our own original stuff in there. It doesn't work in the context of that movie, just because the big controversy with that story is Barbara Gordon's basically a plot device and she gets shot and or raped or whatever. And so to add more to that character in the movie, they gave her that 30-minute prologue. It almost makes her character worse in that prologue.
Yeah.
Because she's lashing out, trying to do her own thing. And that all leads to just having sex with Batman on a roof for no reason. I'm not a fan. Plus, she has that really odd gay 90s friend in the library for no reason. But, yeah.
Well, it wasn't one line. I was like, he said it with a lisp, like, and I thought I was gay.
Yeah, it's just, it's so dated. Yeah. But that movie came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But I don't expect, like, I think with this, I think using elements of that story, which is what they're obviously going for in this live action movie, I think there is something really fun and just cool to be done with that. But what I want with this movie is keep it to that core story. Like, don't throw in characters we don't need, which, again, I don't know what's going on with the script. I don't know what plays into it. Maybe you need a Thomas Wayne, but make sure you need that character. And now that, you know, now that Baldwin's just dropped out, maybe wait a second and before getting someone else in there to do it. Like, is this necessary? What did you think, though, of that, like, 2 seconds he was announced as Thomas Wayne?
I was like, huh. We almost think of him more of as a comedic actor now, but he can be he's got some serious acting chops.
Yeah.
On the row. Yeah.
I actually do like Alec Baldwin. I mean, out of all the, like, 18 Baldwin clone brothers that he has, he's definitely the best one. And we saw him in a movie recently, and he's not in it a lot, but
we'll
liked
talk
him in
about
that.
It, yeah. Yeah.
You're right, though. He is kind of, even in more serious movies, he is always kind of that, like, he adds that levity to it almost. But here he'd just be a big grumpy man beating up robbers who try to take pearl necklaces. And that's pretty cool, too, I guess. I don't really have anything else to say on that. They did get a composer for that movie, though, that I could tell you about right here, right now. Let's see. His name is...
Is it Hans Zimmer? No. Is it Alan Silvestri?
No, Hans Zimmer's doing 1984. No, it's... Oh, wait. Maybe I can't say this name. Holder Gondetier. He's the guy who composed Day of the Soldado.
Okay.
So I don't really remember any music from that movie.
Soldado theme.
Yeah. Just throw that in. Add a little bit of spice to the Joker movie.
You got bravado. Taking down the Soldado.
Very good. You want to hear some more news, though?
Yes.
Well, some other people have been cast in different movies, and as far as I know, they're still around. 2 people have been cast in Star Wars 9. They are, I know you're excited. It's filming right now, Sean.
Yeah, I know.
Go sneak up on the Millennium Falcon set. Take a look at that really expensive camera they're using. Maybe, like, I don't know, say hi to J.J. Abrams. Ask him what he's doing.
J.J. Abrams?
J.J. Abrams. What he is doing is casting Matt Smith and Dominic Monaghan in roles for Star Wars Episode 9.
Yeah.
And
old Dominic Monaghan from Lost.
He's also Merry from Lord of the Rings.
He was also in Wolverine Origins. Remember? The guy who can...
he's the guy that could turn off lights, yeah.
Very good power.
It is kind of nice, though. I imagine you don't have to pay anyone for electricity, because you are electricity, so... Yeah. I've completely forgot about him being in that film. I like that guy, though. I really like him as Merry in Lord of the Rings. I don't really... Him and Matt Smith, who's... He's the... he's that one Doctor Who that everyone liked when that came back and was big.
Not Penny's Boats, for all my Lost fans out there. You know what I'm talking about. Oh. On the hand. Yeah, he's drowning to death. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's in like the water, like... case thing, isn't he?
Yeah, you never seen the show.
I've seen that promo.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
I've seen the promo where he holds his hand on.
You don't know what's happening.
He's got words on his hand,
right?
That
was a sad moment. Not Penny's Boat.
Well, hopefully he doesn't go through that again in Star Wars 9, but we don't really know what they're doing. There's a lot of hush-hush around that set these days.
The science in that scene doesn't even make sense.
Sean, we're not talking about Lost right now. We're talking about the science in Star Wars Episode 9, your favorite franchise, and this big conclusion to the new trilogy. Actually, it's just a big conclusion to the overall Skywalker saga.
Let's end it for a while, why don't we, after this? Let's just...
Never going to happen. You know that.
Let's just put all these on hold for like 5 years.
It's interesting you say that, though, because we saw another Star Wars movie this year, Solo, a Star Wars movie. Yeah. Well, we did. Not many other people did. And it's because of not many people seeing that apparently Disney's freaking out what to do with this movie. And I don't know if they're... Like, there's rumors of reshoots. They're bringing back the new Chewbacca guy. They've got all these different cast members they've got to juggle. Carrie Fisher's going to be brought back in archival footage from episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how that works because she was already, like, her story in that movie, she was kind of in a different position in 7. Episode 9's kind of like fending for herself. Plus, wouldn't they have to CGI new clothes for her? I don't know.
Really?
Mark Hamill's confirmed to come back as well as I assume
Force
a Force
ghost, whatever.
Which I'm not. I would have just been happy leaving that character dead, because I didn't even really. I know we talked about this, and that movie's, you know, it's been out long enough where we can kind of just talk spoilers and everything. But when that character died, I kind of just wanted him to be left alone. I liked his moment in that movie, but I feel like killing him off was just kind of like, eh. They already did it with Harrison Ford. You didn't really need to do it again with another legacy character. Just let him sit all sad on that rock for the rest of his life, which, you know, couldn't have been much longer. There's something in that green milk.
I have the same look on my face whenever I'm sitting in front of a Star Wars movie.
I know you're fed up with this franchise overall.
They're not very good.
Still excited about 9, though?
I want to be, but I'm not.
Yeah. You're going to see what the first trailer gives?
Yeah. Force Awakens was fine. Last Jedi is just a bad movie. So no, I don't really. I'm indifferent to it.
The only one that I've been kind of... I maintain, as I always do, that 15 to 20 minutes of The Last Jedi are fun and enjoyable. The Solo movie is technically a better made film, but it is just kind of nothing, which is almost worse to me. So the only thing that's got me concerned about Episode 9 is they got J.J. Abrams back. He's... Like, my complaints with The Force Awakens is it's just a rehash of A New Hope. But it was fun, and I liked the new characters and what they did with them enough to kind of give it a pass. I don't want a rehash of Return of the Jedi in this movie, though.
Don't worry. J.J. Abrams never just remakes stuff for nostalgia's sake.
But that's the thing. Like, I know that's what Disney wants them to do because of the controversy surrounding the differences in The Last Jedi. Like, say what you want about The Last Jedi as a film. As far as Star Wars movies go, it's really ambitious in what it was doing. Like, it did a lot of stuff that Star Wars has never done before. Like, highway space chases and a lot of sexual tension via Force time calls.
This time, they're not even related.
They're not. Oh, maybe. Remains to be seen. Are her parents nobody? Or are they going to go back on that, you think?
I don't care.
Yeah, I know you don't. But... I'm interested to see what this movie becomes, especially with this being the last in this new trilogy, because that'll determine where we go with the 80 million Star Wars films we make forward. And I want those to be good. And I think at some level, you want those to be good, too.
Oh, no. Like, I don't go into Star Wars movies being like, I hope this is bad so I can just make fun of it. No, I want to watch good movies.
It is a nice bonus for you, though.
Just make good movies.
Yeah. Well, Sean, get in there. Throw your hat in the ring.
You have 8 Below on DVD.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway.
You ever seen 8 Below?
I have seen 8 Below.
It's fun.
Yeah.
They fight that scary seal.
Yeah, a leopard seal.
Yeah. It's no good. He's hiding in that whale.
I like leopard seals.
Because they hate Star Wars as much as you?
No, just they're neat animals.
More on that later.
We're going to do a whole podcast of just me digressing and to talk about animals.
Like a separate podcast.
I like animals.
You do. Yeah. You like them more than people.
They make more sense to me.
Sean, I've got news all day over here. What about you?
You don't. I got.
Don't tell me I don't. I'm the only one who's given news
look,
so far.
There's not a lot of news that came out.
Still got more than you.
Yeah, but that might have been all of it.
I don't think that's true.
You got something else?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Quick little thing. DC streaming service, where only DC stuff is. It's, what is it called again?
DC Nation? No.
No. It's bigger than that.
DC Bigger Nation?
No. Universe. DC Universe. That's where DC stuff's going to be. It's coming out on September 15th. So,
okay.
You remember a while ago when you paid like 5 months in advance, finally get to use that. And it's going to have all the exclusive stuff on it. Going to have a Titans. It's going to have another.
Oh, I do have some news.
Oh, there you go.
To that. We love the Doom Patrol here.
No one loves Doom Patrol more than you, I always say.
So we got some more casting.
Yeah, we do.
Alan Tudyk is Mr. Nobody.
Okay, yeah, I saw that, but I don't know. I mean, he's literally a Mr. Nobody to me. Who is that in the comics?
I don't know a lot about him. He's a villain.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Alan Tudyk is a villain.
I like Alan Tudyk.
I love Alan Tudyk.
But
I never really see, he's kind of that lovable side character.
Yeah. I think he's a Grant Morrison creation, and we know I don't like Grant Morrison. Well, we've been over that.
I know a lot of people who love Doom Patrol, they associate it with Grant Morrison's run. Like, if I imagine all the stuff they're going to do in this is going to be Grant Morrison.
Have you seen any pictures of this guy, this villain?
No, I have not.
So I think the idea, from what I was reading was...
Wait, hold on, turn it upside down. Nope, I still don't see any.
that's the idea. I think the idea behind the villain is he looks like a piece of art that's hard to look at. You can't really ever place him.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. I guess that's where the name Villain comes from, Mr. Nobody.
Did he just kind of pop up out of nowhere?
I almost know nothing about him, so.
Oh, man.
But just saying that Alan Tudyk is going to be in this great show.
Oh,
this great cast of characters.
I know you're ready for it. It's crazy, like, the kind of the star power they're getting for these shows, because Brendan Fraser was cast as Mr. Robot Man.
Yep.
Which, speaking of that, have you seen all the set photos that have leaked?
Nope.
You should look here. Come over here.
I don't want to.
No, there's a bunch. Come here. I've got them all pulled up, ready to go. You can talk into the mic while you're over here. Okay.
Stand up,
so,
Hash Brown.
Yeah, so they're filming it right now.
Okay, that's Robot
so
Man.
So that's some of a Robot Man.
Yeah.
Here, let me turn the mic towards you.
No, you don't...
And then we've got, who else? Oh, that's a...
Negative Man, I think.
Negative Man, he's got the bandages and stuff, yeah? And then I think this is this is the crazy lady with different personalities.
Oh, yeah, crazy.
Hold on. She is... Crazy Jane.
Okay,
yeah. And then Elastic Woman just looks like a regular person. Where's she at? She's just a regular gal with a cool dress.
Okay.
But apparently that dress is like one of her original costumes. And I think
yeah,
as far
I recognize
as
her.
Yeah, got that face, you know. You never forget that face. Yeah, but that's all that's leaked right now as far as the main patrol dooming about. And then the Alan Tudyk news. It's in full swing, Sean.
Yeah, I don't like Doom Patrol, but let's move forward.
That one set photo of Robot Man does confirm what you thought though, where it's just going to be a guy, and then Brendan Fraser's going to do a voice. So you know that's good news.
I wonder if this character, Mr. Nobody, if they're just going to have Alan Tudyk and just say, yeah, this is Mr. Nobody or...
Oh, like an alias, kind
of? Yeah.
I just imagine, like, as weird as Doom Patrol can be and is, which is one of the reasons I'm not really a fan of it, I feel like they'd have to just go out and, I don't know, maybe it's just a painting on a wall the entire time. I don't know. But if you
cool,
look at...
Because I don't know how much money they're dealing with here, but it is if they had Alan Tudyk, but do interesting stuff with the camera when they show him. Because I don't know if they're going to be able to capture that look, the actual Mr. Nobody.
But yeah.
Like, have the camera be out of focus and stuff whenever he's on screen. Do something crazy like that. Why not?
Fisheye lenses all around.
Why not?
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Kind of, you've seen the first season of Legion, right?
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot of interesting and weird camera stuff with that show. And I've heard it's gone even crazier in the second season. So, yeah, maybe kind of use that as your inspiration. I think that'd be cool. But... I mean, I know how much you love the Doom Patrol, but honestly, Sean, I'm not into this. I don't think I can be.
Me neither, Snoop.
I mean, I'll come over to your house and watch the premiere on your new DC Universe Nation TV, you bought the whole TV that comes with it 5 months early.
Mm.
But I just, it's not for me. But you know what is for me?
What?
Or at least I hope it'll be. Iron Fist Season 2 is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
September
7th.
7th, yeah. There's another thing coming out September 7th I'm excited about.
What's that?
Spider-Man, the game on the PS4.
Yeah, we don't care about that.
It's
going to
be great.
Much.
But anyway, when that comes out, there's going to be Iron Fist flying, swords swinging.
A lot of iron fisting. So get
thrusted
in
through.
So get in a comfortable position, people. There's going to be a lot of iron fisting about.
Settle in. Until we get like 8 episodes of where it turns off and he doesn't know how to turn it back on. It's going to be, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of that.
There's going to be a 3-episode stretch where it's just like, I don't understand what happened.
Just shaking his hand. He's like, on.
He punches a concrete wall really hard and just breaks his hand.
I know I'm looking forward to, let's look at Davos being so much better at it than him. And then at the end of the season, just thinking, why don't they just let him be the new Iron Fist?
Somebody claps their hands and his fist turns on. Yeah. Like the clapper.
You know, Mike clapper hands and turn that on or off.
Yeah.
We've got reveals of a new character. One you've told me about in the past.
Alice Eve.
Alice Eve is going to be, she's not a character. She's an actress woman.
Yes, but she's playing Typhoid Mary.
Yeah. And there's a set photo of her. She's got a stick.
Mm-hmm.
Looks pretty scary.
Typhoid Mary is traditionally a Daredevil villain slash love interest.
I think it's where you told me about her originally.
Yeah, slash Wilson Fisk love interest.
Ooh.
So we'll see what happens there.
Well, so does she have any powers? What's her deal?
So she has a split personality. She has Mary, who's like this kind, lovable woman who Matt Murdock starts dating.
Mm-hmm.
But she has the alter ego. Get that out of here, Snoop. Typhoid Mary, who's a villain, and she loves doing bad stuff. She's up to no good, usually.
Interesting.
And these two personas are so different that Matt can't even tell the difference because, like, her body chemistry changes. Like, you smell different now that you're Typhoid Mary.
And that's how he sees.
Yeah.
With his nose.
Yeah. Like a big bloodhound.
Really throws him off.
Yeah.
Get you. Huh.
And then eventually Wilson Fisk finds all this out and kind of uses it to his advantage.
Yeah. You think we'll see a Wilson Fisk in
here? Yes, if she has power. She can. I think she can start, like, fires and stuff when she's Typhoid Mary. Like, she has pyrokinesis.
Like
to a degree or something like that.
That's kind of interesting because she has red hair.
Yeah.
She's fiery. Does her hair color change?
It might get redder.
Does she dye it? And that's what throws Matt Murdock off the scent?
No.
Hmm. Well, what's gonna trick Iron Fist, though? Because he has his eyes.
I don't know. That's why I'm wondering what they're going to do with the character in this.
It'll be interesting, I think. She'll probably be like a, maybe not henchman, but like a... Well, you know they're going to be doing a lot of side stuff with Colleen Wing and Misty Knight, so maybe they focus on them.
I was going to say, for all we know, they might just be setting her up to like using season 3 of Daredevil. Who knows?
I wanted to kind of think about that and talk about it. In the comics, I think you've told me this, that in storylines where Matt Murdock supposedly dies or disappears or whatever, Iron Fist kind of steps up a lot of times, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's... you read Civil War.
Yeah, I don't remember it because it's not that good, but...
But in that storyline, Daredevil is Danny Rand.
Oh, okay.
Because Matt Murdock, he was gallivanting about at the
moment. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So Danny Rand takes over as Daredevil for a little bit.
Yeah, and I know that it's been a while since I've seen The Defenders, but I know that was a pretty important scene at the end was him clapping on that fist at night in the middle of the streets with a hoodie because Matt Murdock wasn't there.
Nice little tracksuit on.
Yeah, just give him the costume. If they don't do it this season, I'm fed up.
It's not a hard costume to replicate.
Yeah, it's not like it's a budget thing. It's not like punching a dragon, which we're never going to see. Just give him a bandana and a and an open tracksuit.
Just like that one episode he shows up in Luke Cage. Man, you ain't punching no dragon.
He says how the audience feels. But I'm excited about this season. I know that's probably... You know, it's going to disappoint me overall by being excited about it, but I mean, Alice Eve is a character of this.
Yeah.
She's a great actress that never
really
got her due.
You know what they could do?
Huh.
So Alice Eve, as I know you're aware of, she suffers from heterochromia.
The actress Alice Eve, yes.
Yes, you know what that is?
She's got different eye colors.
There you go.
I did it.
She has two different colored eyes. So what would be neat is if they took advantage of that and like switched eye colors depending on the character she is.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. That's
see, like that classic close up on the eyes as they transition.
Yeah.
Mm.
That popped into my head just now. Look at me putting stuff together.
Well, I'm looking at this set photo and I see one colored eyes.
Okay.
So, but you know, that could be before post. We don't know.
Yeah, she was, of course, at the beginning of First Class, where Charles Xavier is talking to the woman in the bar, and he's like, "Oh, you have your own mutation." He mentions her different colored eyes. That was Alice Eve who was playing that girl.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
That's cool. Did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
We learned today, didn't we? Well, I learned. This is good stuff. Hey, yep. Sean, we have more news than we thought, but I think that might be all of it.
Okay, yeah, we barely had any.
Well, with that attitude, are you surprised? Ooh, one quick thing. It's more of a check it out thing, but I'll go ahead and throw it out for you. If you haven't seen it yet, there's a quick little Young Justice Season 3 clip online.
Okay.
It's great. It's Nightwing taken down. You see in the trailers, he's like fighting a bunch of people who are harboring metahumans.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of mention what they're doing with them, and they mentioned the name of the organization that is doing that. It's called Bedlam. I don't know what that means as far as comic stuff goes. Maybe you do. I don't. But yeah, basically, he takes down a bunch of thugs and then releases a bunch of kids, and it seems like that they're experimenting on these kids with the metagene to turn them into metahumans. So I'm excited.
Okay.
It's so good to see new stuff with that show, which that should be. I don't know if that, I don't think that's coming on as soon as the DC Universe stuff is launched. Yeah,
they're just going to have that Supergirl movie from the 80s is all they're going to have.
Which is really all we need, honestly, at the end of the day. But yeah, hey, check that out.
Shut up. Shut up. She heard you.
Sorry. Tell her to wait her turn.
Wait your turn, Siri.
She can be on that podcast about animals you want her to.
Ooh. Hey, Siri. What's your favorite animal?
I wrote my master's thesis on the killer rabbit of Kaer Ban Ogg.
Wow.
Okay.
She went all out.
Anyway.
Good. That's good content.
Is it topic time?
Yeah, might as well be.
Okay, I don't know how this is going to turn out, so let's do it.
It's probably going to turn into like a rambling mess like any other episode we do.
Yeah, so I'm Dr. Jazz and I'm Waffle House Coffee. So,
put some cream and sugar in that?
A lot, yeah.
A lot.
A lot.
Oh my God.
I'd like 3 cups.
But they never give you enough on that first round. They're like, here's some cream and sugar.
Well, that's why I put it in myself.
Up the butt. Straight in.
Nope. No, okay, so.
You didn't deny it.
So I thought it'd be interesting if we talk about the concept of jumping the shark when it comes to like TV shows. And I guess you can apply it to movie franchises too.
Okay.
So you're familiar with this concept, right?
It's basically that trope that it was given. Like, the name actually came from someone like on a radio show, I think, in the 90s.
Yeah.
And they were referring to the episode of Happy Days, where they basically didn't have anything to do and to, you know, get ratings up. He literally jumped a shark.
Yeah. It was in season 5. It was a 3-part episode, I think. Hollywood Part 3. I didn't watch a lot of Happy Days back in the day. But I think Fonzie and the gang, they go to Hollywood, and yeah, he literally jumps over a shark. What's interesting about that episode is people, fans of Happy Days, don't necessarily consider it to be the moment where the show actually jumped the shark. Because that went on, the show lasted for like 11 seasons. But,
he went on that long, yeah. Wow.
But
when did Ron Howard leave?
I kind of tell you.
John.
But yeah, a lot of fans are like, no, the show went downhill like later on in the series' life. But so jumping the shark is, it's the moment in a TV show where everything goes bad. So we're going to see how many of these we can name and talk about or whatever.
For me, it's not just, I mean, you're more or less right. Like, it's when it just goes to shit. But I can also consider it that point where it's no longer what it was in tone and just story.
So
it's not even that it's necessarily awful. Or like you said, like a lot of people thought Happy Days didn't go to shit until later on. But just, it really takes you out to see a moment like that, knowing what it was.
Because, like, in that moment in Happy Days, they had never done anything like that before.
That's not very Fonzie-like. Yeah. It's not cool.
Usually he's just punching jukeboxes and making them play whatever song he wants. And it's different from, like, because, you know, a lot of shows that last a long time, they just kind of fizzle out, some of them. They just go on a slow decline. And there's not necessarily a moment where you can be like, yeah, that's where it got bad. It's just kind of like, yeah, around season 7, 8, it started not be as good. So we're going to see how many of these we can name and kind of compare it to that or whatever.
And you gave me the go-ahead to use either movies or shows.
Yeah, you can talk, because it applies to movie franchises.
Okay, too. I think I'm going to have more to say about movie franchises, because believe it or not, Sean, I'm not like you. I don't force myself to watch a lot of bad TV. I'm not on seasons 10 through 12 of The Big Bang Theory like you are.
I'm not. That show's finally... We didn't talk about that news. That show is finally ending.
Well, we mentioned it last time.
Did we?
Yeah, it's kind of in passing, but yeah.
I don't know. That was a long time ago, and I hadn't had as much Waffle House coffee back then.
It was a week ago.
Snoop, that was like a year ago in Waffle House time. Okay? Time works differently in that restaurant.
I think next time, put one less creamer up your butt. You're a little too hyped for it.
Or one more.
We'll find the happy medium eventually. But this is your topic, so I'm going to let you take the lead and kind of just talk me through a thing.
One moment, I think, when a show starts to, when it jumps a shark, so to speak, is when either the main character or one of the main characters leaves. You can pinpoint as that is the moment, like this was the before and after moment. Michael Scott leaving The Office, Barney Fife leaving Andy Griffith's show, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's one of those things that it happens a lot, especially in TV. You know, people get sick of being on a show for whatever. They want to go do movies.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it'll work out. Maybe it won't. But also, it's how they handle the show after that really signals, do I need to jump ship now? Or is there still something here? Because the thing was like The Office, for example. I feel like The Office, when Michael Scott left back in season 7, I think is when he left.
Yeah.
I feel like you have such a good ensemble cast there. You could have made it work, but they went the route of, well, people really love Michael Scott. They love that weird boss character. Let's just replace him. I don't think that was necessarily the way to go, because they brought in James Spader, who for like 5 seconds was interesting, but never, like, you can't make a character like that work.
They made Andy the manager.
Eventually, yeah.
And his personality completely changed.
Yeah, I hate that character anyway. But you're right, he did kind of, like, Andy was always kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But
that show also suffers. There's another TV trope called Flanderization. It comes from the character Ned Flanders in The Simpsons. Basically, it's the idea of, like, this kind of personality trait that a character has slowly overtakes them, and they just become that. It's like in the very early days of The Simpsons, Ned Flanders, he was this religious kind of righteous neighbor, but as the show went on, that's all he was.
It was more just for the joke than the actual character.
Which, in the case of Ned Flanders, it kind of worked, but not for a lot of characters. Like, Kevin just becomes an idiot on that show. Andy is just defined by his temper. Dwight is just, he just becomes stranger.
Kevin does drop that chili at one point, though.
But yeah, so I think when you can point to a lot of shows, like, I don't like the show, but 2 and a Half Men, when Charlie Sheen leaves,
Did you ever watch the episode where Ashton Kutcher came in?
Mm-hmm. I've seen the final episode where they dropped the piano on him.
Yeah, it's like, was it, what's his face? Is that the producer's there too?
And he's just Chuck Lorre.
It was just like one long, I got you, or.
Yeah, because they have somebody else dressed up as Charlie Sheen. You see him from the back, and then a piano is dropped on him.
And then they drop a piano on Chuck Lorre.
And then, like, Chuck Lorre says, like, winning or whatever.
Yeah. It's.
But yeah.
I'm not a fan of Chuck Lorre, though. He's kind of a baby in a suit. Most like, his personality is terrible. He's also the reason that the laugh track doesn't die. Because he produces that, I think it just got canceled, but that show with Kathy Bates where they work at a dispensary and sell weed. It's awful. It's one of the worst things could ever watch. And one of the biggest reasons is the laugh track, which I also think he has a hand in Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't let that man spend his money on television anymore.
I do like watching shows on YouTube where they put clips of it on, but they take away the laugh track.
You hear all that dead space.
Yeah, and you can just...
It's painful.
Yeah, they do it with that Two Broke Girls one a lot.
Yeah.
They edit out the laugh track.
Yeah. It's more or less gone at this point. Like,
yeah, if you're still using it, it's...
It's cheap in a way. Like, yeah. If your show is funny, you don't need it. But also, those are still those dated sitcoms where just rapid joke at one after another, hoping that at least two of them land in the episode. So,
but yeah, there are a lot of examples of this. I didn't mention, I don't like this show, but that 70s show, the main character leaves.
Two of the main characters leave, which I know you're not the biggest fan of Ashton Kutcher, but again, that's taking an ensemble cast. You do have a lot of people left over who stay. There's a gap there that needs to be filled, but I think the worst thing you can do, which is kind of just the go-to, is finding a new character that's similar enough but has his own different set of quirks. One of the reasons why those later seasons are so bad after Topher Grace and Ashton Kutcher leave is they bring in the character of Randy, who's just kind of like this nice guy with great hair, and that's his only thing, is he talks about how handsome he is. But then when it comes down to it, he's going to buy everyone a trip to the cabin or whatever. And he's just a douche. And you don't know that character, so you have no reason to put up with his annoying personality traits.
I have a question about that show.
Yeah.
I don't like that show, but after Topher Grace's character leaves, don't they all still meet up in his parents' basement for some reason? Why do they allow that?
Well, no, it actually, it does work in a sense because, you know, it's the 70s. It's about kind of this community where we've grown up with these kids. We basically raised them ourselves.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do back then. You're like, well, this kid's always at my house. I guess I'll feed him.
Yeah.
So in that way, I can see that where you don't look at them as just my kid's weird friends. You look at them as well, these are my other weird daughters and sons.
Yeah, okay.
Because they take in what's his face during the first half of that show, Danny Masterson's character, because his mom dips out, and so they kind of adopt him. So that part I get. But yeah, just you mentioning that, letting that new guy in there, they've never met this guy before. As far as they know, he's just a weird 19-year-old who looks like he's 32 trying to bang their son's former girlfriend. It just makes no sense. But yeah, I think we're, by trying to take characters that have been lost and that you've grown attached to and you know them, just going, oh, well, they're gone, but here's a new character to fill the gap, it doesn't really work. Yeah. You could maybe do it. It's just with that 70s show in mind.
I think it works. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, I was just going to say, with that 70s show in mind, Topher Grace leaving in particular, he kind of gave them a heads up. So they dedicate an entire season to kind of sending him off. If you wanted to bring in a new character to replace him, sprinkle that character in during that season. Don't have, don't take away the main focus of Eric leaving, but have him in there getting to know the group and figuring out just kind of what his deal is. And it'll at least, it makes the pill harder or easier to swallow.
Yeah, I think it, drama seemed to pull it off better than comedies, I'd say.
Okay.
Because there are long running dramas where you have people coming and going.
Yeah, like a Walking Dead or a Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Well, even as hospital dramas do it a lot, where they have main characters leaving all the time. One sitcom that I think sort of is able to, it doesn't last that much longer after they leave, but Parks and Rec, Ann Perkins, and What's-His-Face, Rob Lowe, they leave halfway through season 6. But I think the ensemble, I think the fact that the show didn't last that much longer and the characters that are left are still interesting enough.
Yeah, with that show, because I love that show more than The Office, and I think the characters have a huge reason for that. You never really feel like you lose something hugely important by losing those two characters. Obviously, they're a big deal. Ann Perkins in particular has been there since the beginning, and she's kind of this foil for the audience, the one straight man in the show. But when she leaves, it feels natural, and she gets a happy enough ending, but there's still so much going on in the other characters' lives that you don't even really notice it to a point. I was more upset to lose Rob Lowe, and he came in later.
Yeah.
But he's just so funny. So.
Oh, that I was going to mention it. There's another trope called growing the beard. It's the opposite of this trope. You probably never heard of this one.
I haven't heard of this one, no.
So growing the beard is the idea of when it's the moment when a show improves. And it comes from, I like TV tropes. I like discussing them and reading about them.
Facts.
Yeah, it's the moment when a show improves. It comes from Star Trek The Next Generation, Commander Riker, the guy with the beard.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay, when the show first started, he didn't have a beard. And the show noticeably improved in the second season. Apparently that first season's not good. And it's starting to improve about the same time he started to grow his beard out. So
people associate it with that.
So for Parks and Recreation, when they brought Rob Lowe's character and the other guy in, that could be a moment, that's when the show started to grow the beard.
Because in the originally with that show, the thing is about that first season of Parks and Rec, kind of going over that, is that first season's not that good because they just try to copy The Office, and they have two straight men. They have Ann Perkins, and then that Mark Bandanowitz guy or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
You lose that guy, get in someone like Rob Lowe and Adam Scott. Just works so much better in that way. I haven't watched it, but I know there's a noticeable point where apparently it just goes to crap. So I figured maybe you could talk about that. What's the deal with Dexter?
I was going to get to this. Sometimes it's something that happens behind the scenes. Scott Buck. He comes in during season 5.
As the new showrunner.
Yeah. And that's you've seen some of Scott Buck's work. So you know what the man's capable of or not capable of.
He's got his style, doesn't he?
Yeah. And the show becomes, it's not nearly as interesting, or Dexter was more interesting when it focused just on Dexter, his inner thoughts, how he viewed the world. The show loses a lot of its, not just its edge, but it had this dark sense of humor in their early seasons, because Dexter, they would do neat stuff with him. Like, I remember there was a moment where he's in the crime lab and they don't really make a lot out of it, but he's just sitting there staring at blood slides for a few seconds and he's just kind of taking it in. And they had stuff like that throughout the early seasons of just how creepy he could be.
Yeah, those quirks that kind of give him away.
Yeah, stuff like that gets taken away. Dexter, his sense of humor gets taken away from him. You start to focus on more of the secondary characters, which most of them weren't that good.
I was going to ask, I know it's the sister that everyone hates, generally.
Yeah, she gets better, Deb. But you start to focus on, like, Angel's character, Masuka. Like, Masuka was just meant to be, like, just a comedic side character. But in that final season, like, oh, he's got this daughter, and he's got to connect with her. You don't care, but he's got to connect with her. And then they just drop it. They don't even do anything with it. There's a lot of moments like that.
Is there one moment in particular that you just almost made you quit the show that you're fed up with?
I stuck with it, but like that final season, it's so boring.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame when you look at how good that show was in its early seasons to what it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
In season five, when Scott Buck takes over, it's not even terrible. It is very much of a, this was the before Scott Buck and this was the after Scott Buck.
There's a real like loss of quality for you. Yeah. I guess jumping the shark though, the ending itself would be pretty, like, again, watching that show, knowing what it was, especially in those first four seasons, and then you would have never guessed that the ending is just him becoming a lumberjack after fighting a hurricane.
Thing is, the original ending for that show was so much better than what it was they ended up having.
What's the original ending?
So, this is what the original creator, I can't think of his name, wanted for the show. He wanted the ending to be, like, you get to his final murder or whatever, and then it zooms out, and you realize that Dexter's been in prison for the entire length of the show, and this is him monologuing to either the viewer or whoever. And then he's taken to the electric chair, and you see all of his victims around him, and he's having to finally face his consequences of what he did.
Huh.
And that's how the show ends.
That's kind of interesting.
Which is a lot better than
him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's better than him fighting a hurricane, but
I don't know.
He grows a beard at the end of the show.
He does. Oh, while we're on that topic, one show I think that narrowly avoided jumping the shark was Seinfeld.
Skimmed it?
Yeah.
Touched the fin?
Yeah. At the end of season 7, Larry David left. And I mentioned the concept of Flanderizing. The characters after Larry David left, who was the main creator of the show, it was created by Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. But Larry David was kind of the guy who kept it a bit more grounded. So after that, the characters become a bit more unhinged. Like George, he's just yelling and screaming all the time. He gets stupider for no reason. Kramer, his schemes get more out there. And Jerry Seinfeld very wisely decided to end the show at season 9. And, you know, he famously, it was like the biggest paycheck that was ever turned down in television history or something. He still holds the record, I think. But I think if that show went on for like one more season, it would have gotten like just, it would have lost what it was.
That's a dangerous position to be in when a show goes on that long.
Because
the sweet spot generally is like, call it at 5 or at most 6, I think.
One thing I want to talk about is The Simpsons. One of my favorite shows.
That's had plenty of years to jump many
sharks.
It's
about to start season 30.
Yeah.
They're doing,
I think Fox announced another movie.
Yeah, they want to do that in a Family Guy movie.
Yeah.
Which, that movie's fine. Simpsons movie's fine.
I like the Simpsons movie.
So, I know you didn't watch a ton of The Simpsons. As just an animation fan, you should go back and watch those early years.
I've watched, they show them a lot. Back when I was in school, they showed a lot during, like, philosophy classes. And it was cool to actually, I get more out of it by talking about kind of what the episode does mm-hmm. with themes and everything, and then watching it. But, yeah, it's one of those things that I'm not even opposed to it. I think I gravitate more towards Futurama, and because those shows go on forever, you know me, when I do watch a show, I like to commit and finish it, and The Simpsons will never end, and even if it was going to end at like 30 or whatever, I still wouldn't want to go back and watch them all, because I've heard that after the first, like, was it like 8 or 9 seasons?
Yeah,
it just,
you don't have to watch anything after that.
Yeah.
It's just The Simpsons, those first 8 or 9 seasons influenced so much of what TV is now. And you go back and watch it, it still holds up. And it's crazy how well it holds up. You can watch like a 2-minute clip on YouTube from like season 4. And it's crazy just like in the span of 2 minutes, not just how many jokes are crammed in it, but like quality jokes.
Yeah.
Like you can tell a lot of thought went into this, like a lot of detail went into making sure they got this right. But season 9, there was a guy who took over the show. He became the showrunner. His name was Mike Scully. And Mike Scully was, he had been a writer on the show for a while, but he was a bit more, he wanted to turn the show more into a cartoon. Before him, the show was a bit more grounded, and it stayed true to who the characters were. Like, the show, it had a lot of heart to it, those early episodes. Like, there's a few episodes that'll make you tear up, like Mother Simpson and Lisa Substitute. So, there was an episode called The Principal and the Popper. This is season 9. The character Principal Skinner, he lives with his mom, and he's kind of like Bart's enemy at the school, and he was this Vietnam veteran. Anyway, you find out in this episode that Principal Skinner is not actually Principal Skinner. He is a character by the name of Armin Tamzarian, I believe was the name they used. And it turns out that, like, the real Principal Skinner had supposedly died in Vietnam, and this guy takes his place. So everything we know about this character up to this point is a lie. And it's more or less just done as a joke. And at the end of the episode, they're like, well, because the real Principal Skinner comes back, and they're like, we don't like this guy as much as the other guy. So they just get rid of him. It more or less ends with, well, let's pretend all that never happened.
So but, it just goes on being Principal Skinner?
Yeah, but, you know, it's a comedy, but it had stayed so true to who the characters were, and it had all these defining moments. The show had done goofy stuff before, but they had never done something like this, where they just, like, violated who these characters were supposed to be. And people hated it. Matt Groening, the creator of the show, he always cites this as his least favorite episode. So a lot of people, like, point to that episode of The Simpsons, and the thing is, the episode's kind of funny. It's not even a bad episode, but people like to point to that one as being the moment where, like, yeah, the show started to lose what it was.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So, the character that they've known this entire point, like, when the real guy comes back, he would have not... He doesn't know any of those people, though, right? Because he hasn't...
He knew his mother.
That was like, it, though.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it sounds stupid, but when you've spent, you know, at that point, 9 years with this character, and then the show is just like, oh, yeah, this isn't even the guy you thought it was.
I mean, take a lot from people who dedicate that time and get to know those characters. Yeah, I get that to a point, especially. Wow. It's deep, Sean.
But yeah, go back. I could do a whole episode on The Simpsons.
I bet you will. Right after that animal podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of moments where this show has technically jumped the shark, but one that stands out to me is with Roseanne.
Yeah.
I would say just, in a way, that last season.
Just the moment where they win the lottery.
Yeah, because what people love about that original show is you can relate to those characters. You know, the stuff they do in that show, you either have done yourself or see yourself doing. And that means a lot to people, especially during that time in that social class.
Yeah, they're a blue-collar family trying to get by.
Yeah, and so you take those characters, they win the lottery, which in a way you think, well, yeah, like that's what people are always trying to do. They're trying to win the lottery, get big money. But seeing someone who does get that money, what they do with it after. And so you lose those characters because of all the stuff they're doing. Like, they don't have to worry about going to their jobs or whatever. Or just, I don't know. I don't know exactly when the ending itself, where it ends up being, and you know, it's written down. That's what she wanted to happen in her life, which I like that ending a lot. It does discount that entire last season, but I don't know when they came up with that idea. You know, maybe they were looking at the ratings of the show and, you know, seeing the negative reviews, and they're like, how can we go back on this? It's clever in a way, but yeah, I think for a last season especially, it's kind of a waste overall.
Yeah, and I think that's a show that was starting to fizzle out anyway. Like, season 8's not that great, and then you just get season 9. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other moments and just, like, where there's an actual, like, moment in the show.
Some people say second Becky, but...
Yeah, but...
That was kind of common with shows back then.
Yeah.
You're always switching out actresses or actors.
And they even comment on the show like, oh, this is like Darren from, you know, Bewitched or whatever.
Well, what's weird about that one is, if I remember right, don't they alternate after a while?
Yeah, because Leslie Goranson comes back.
Yeah, and so they switch her with Sarah Chalk.
Sarah Chalk, yeah.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it's not supposed to be a joke in the show in a way. Like, I'm not supposed to notice that they keep doing this.
Well, there was even one episode I remember where like an announcer came on, like in the role of Becky this episode, blank will be playing her.
That's yeah. good. Eventually just like get a man in there. Why not? But yeah, I think just them winning that lottery is just, especially for the last season, like getting to say goodbye to a lot of these characters. You didn't get to do that because they're not themselves. And then it turns out it was all a lie. Like I said, it was a clever twist. And I actually like that ending a lot because I didn't see it coming, but it would have been better just to kind of have like some really heartfelt moments. But I guess deep down, they all knew that they were coming back for a revival and then a spinoff of the revival. Oh.
They're killing her off.
They're killing her off, yeah.
Well, what's funny is all the headlines were like, NBC or ABC is going to kill off Roseanne Barr. And it's like, really? That's a bit far. Why don't they just kill off the character and not the actual person?
She really made them mad. Well, it's ABC. It's Disney. Yeah. They could do it. I'm surprised they're going through with this. Like, even the cast to a point. Like, I didn't expect John Goodman to go through with all this, but because he doesn't need the money.
No.
He just did this because he wanted to have fun with everybody. He just wanted to be a John Goodman one last time. But, yeah, I don't know. I like that show overall, and it was kind of sad to see it have that whimper of an ending overall. Here's a show that's still going on, but I think it jumped the shark multiple times a long time ago. The Walking Dead. I did watch the show in the beginning.
Yeah.
We make fun of it all the time, but I like that first season. The second season is where it does get bad, but as far as jumping the shark goes for me, I think when I really just got to a point where I was fed up with it, like I was just disappointed that I kept watching it was, how far, you made it up to 6, right?
So I watched up to the ending of season 6 where they had the fake out with Negan.
Yeah.
Which was, that was the moment for me where I was like, yeah, I'm done with this.
Where the fake out, you're talking about where they were going to, he's going to beat someone up with a bat.
Yeah, and then he just hits the camera and goes red.
It does that classic GoldenEye blood splatter at the end. Yeah, I gave up on it at that point. I think it wasn't even, I don't know why I gave up after this specific point, but I stopped the episode where Abraham, I think is that ginger character's name, he comically punches that guy with the mullet and he falls down like a cartoon character.
Yeah, and you hear the sound effect.
Yeah, I gave up after that, but where it actually jumped the shark for me was back in season 3, at the end of season 3, where this is where the show really got into a bad habit of taking story arcs and dragging them out throughout multiple seasons. So you have the governor come in at that point, and they're always working up towards like, well, we're going to have to fight him. He's no good. We're going to have to fight him. And then they finally go in to fight him. Like they attack the base, and it's where Andrea is killed. I don't care about that character. I hate that character from the moment she's on screen. She's whiny. She's always causing no good, sleeping with anyone she can. And I know that another reason that makes me mad is that's not that character in the comics either. Yeah. She's actually a good character in the comics, but here is just always trying to add more to the plot that doesn't need to be added as far as drama and intensity. And she's killed. And the only good part about that is that's when Michonne decides to team up with the group. But it's supposed to be this heartfelt moment where she was in her own way just trying to help out and do good, and it got her killed. But we were never even really working to that, to me. Like, we were working towards a big fight with the governor and finally taking him down. And they save that until about halfway through season 4. And the thing is, when they finally do get in a fight with the governor in season 4, that's good stuff. Because I like that final confrontation between the governor where he finally gets his comeuppance. But yeah, just to string that out along for ratings' sake. And I know when that show started out, a big appeal of it was you don't know who's going to die, right? Like, you like this character? Well, too bad. But at that point, the show got into a formula of like, you notice a character is getting an odd amount of screen time, you pick up that he or she is going to get killed immediately. Happened with that one. I know the first time I noticed it was where, you remember T-Dog?
Yeah.
Old T-Dog. And he's like, man, I just want to be a good guy and hang out with the rest of the group. He hadn't said 5 words in the entire show up till that point. But then all of a sudden he's getting a whole episode. And lo and behold, he gets bit on the shoulder. Like, it's not surprising in a way because you've seen enough of these characters die in a similar fashion that you know it's coming. You're just waiting for it to be over with. And that was kind of how I felt about her death was I didn't like that character to begin with. That wasn't what the finale should have been. It's not what we were working towards. And it just kind of fizzles out and is over. And you have to wait to see what you want to see in the next season.
Plus, I know they eventually kill off Carl and Andrew Lincoln's leaving. So it's had a few moments where
it's got to be on its way out, I feel.
It makes so much money, though.
But, like, I know after season... I think a lot of people, as far as Jumping the Shark goes, I know a lot of people jumped off or dropped off after when you did, when that yeah. fake-out happened. Because
the ratings aren't what they used to be.
No, certainly not. But I know as far as like basic cable goes, it's still on up there. And I guess that justifies making these seasons. But yeah, to lose to kill off your one main character because you don't want to pay him money and then have the other main characters just leave after this season. Not even a whole season. He's leaving halfway through.
Yeah.
You'd have to reconsider things because when does it get to the point where it's diminishing cost? You know, like we have to pay these actors. We have to pay for that fancy zombie makeup. Greg Nicotero, who's in charge of the costume design, I think he's leaving to go work on a movie now. So that's a big part of that show that I think people have really loved, no matter what, is the costume design and the makeup. It's for television, it's strong, and you lose that guy. So
I have a challenge here.
You're always challenging people to do things.
Yeah, I know.
But you never do anything we ask you to.
Yeah, I get tired.
Sean's sleepy.
Can you name a show that goes on for quite a while, not just like 3 or 4 seasons, but goes on for a number of years, that is able to maintain its quality and never jumps a shark? I can think of one sitcom that went on for 9 years that never really had the moment that like we're talking about.
You can think of one for 9 years?
At least off the top of my head, yeah.
I can't off the top of my head. You really put a lot of pressure on here.
Yeah, I know.
Why don't you talk about your show?
You're going to make fun of me for naming this. I like this show, though. Everybody Loves Raymond.
I like that show.
Yeah, it went on for 9 years, and it went out pretty much as good as it ever was. The characters are basically who they always are. They never become, like, exaggerations of themselves. Nobody leaves. You have more characters brought in, like Robert gets married, but to Amy. But she was there since season one, and it felt like a progression for those characters. It didn't, you know, wasn't like some crazy thing. And the humor was still pretty much what it once was. So, yeah, I think that was an odd example of a show that was able to go out on a high note after 9 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't necessarily think of a show off the top of my head, but we haven't even really talked about movies. I do have a few I want to go over.
Okay.
But a franchise, a long-running franchise that never lost quality, if anything, got better. And I've said this before, I think the Harry Potter franchise is fantastic. Because those first two movies are very much in and of themselves kids' movies, but they're meant to be. And
Christopher Columbus directed the first two.
Yeah. And I think Danny Elfman scored them. Yeah, even those first two movies, especially when you're our age, you know, those kids' age, they're a little older than us, I think. But adults loved those movies back then. Like, it was just a different kids' movie, you know? The thing about being a parent and going to see a kids movie is half the crap you have to see is look at this weird looking animated character who just like a minion, like who just yells a lot and isn't that funny for kids. But when you're an adult, you hate every moment of your life. You don't really get that with the Harry Potter movies. And as they go, those characters grow and the stakes are raised. And I know a lot of people don't necessarily like the way the last book was handled with the 2-part format, and you know, like the first part's better and the last part's just kind of quick and over. But
don't people usually not care for the first half and they like the second half more?
I think it's changed over time because I think
I think at the time people were like, yeah, nothing really happens in this first movie.
Yeah. And that was wasn't that like the first franchise that did that part 1, part 2?
Yeah. And made it, I mean, that book is so long that you kind of have to, and it works in that instance. Now everything does it.
Yeah. I like that first part actually. Those last two movies, I think the first part is more story, more covering the stuff in the book and looking at the characters and kind of this last little journey they're doing. Whereas the second half is just like, I mean, even when the movie starts, it just goes straight into it and doesn't stop until the end. It's really entertaining and it does have a good send off. I think for me, and maybe most people now after it's been like 7 years since that last one ended, but that one doesn't cover as much of the book as maybe it should, which you think is odd because that was the whole point of splitting it up. Like even the ending is different from the book ending is better in a way than the movie. Cause in the movie, he just snaps the wand, but they have a whole bit where he goes into Dumbledore's study in the book and he talks to the painting one last time. And he's like, I know what you did, but it all worked out. And I'm going to fix my wand and then put the Elder Wand where, you know, no one gets it. Like I think he puts it back with Dumbledore so it can be with the last owner, and it's good. And you don't really get that in the movie. But the thing is, like I said, those movies only get better and then never get worse at any point. Like, they never become a drag. You're always excited to come back to that world and see those characters again. So yeah, I don't think there's a bad moment in those movies, really, that makes you think like, man, they really fucked this up. Each movie might not be your favorite, you know, comparing it to the book. Like, maybe there's bits in the book that you didn't get to see. Like, maybe you really wanted to see Harry struggle with his owl exams and you didn't get that.
But I really wanted that.
Just sweating beads over here. You have that one part where he has to write a paragraph in cursive and you're like, oh, I've been there.
Like, how far can owls turn their head?
But even if you didn't get that, you never go, this sucks.
Yeah.
They've ruined these. So yeah. And there are plenty of movies and shows that we've talked about that have done that. You want to go over some movies, or do you have any more shows?
Well, you can say anything.
Yeah, I've got a list of movies, and I kind of agree like with everything that they're saying. we've covered the Spider-Man trilogy, mm-hmm. the Raimi trilogy before, but I don't even think we really talked about, like, when we talked about Spider-Man 3, we said there's elements of a good movie in there.
I would even maintain the first hour of that movie is good.
Yeah. Thinking Jumping the Shark, and when a movie, like, when that movie goes bad, where would you say that happens? Like, where's the moment where you're like,
whoa. As soon as the black suit takes over.
When specifically, though?
When he's going through the city, as soon as it overtakes him.
Yeah, that's what's also.
That's when it turns into something else.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure most of who listens to this or whatever has seen those movies, but if you haven't, like in Spider-Man 3, he gets the symbiote, which is one of the greatest Spider-Man stories ever told to this day. So you think they're going to do this so good. They're going to do this justice. The thing is, Tobey Maguire is never cool, and that's a big part of that character of Peter Parker. When he gets that black symbiote, is he gets that clear self-confidence. He does whatever he wants. He's flirting with everybody. It's already odd to see Tobey Maguire flirting with anyone in a serious manner, but then just playing some cool jazz where he's walking down the street pointing at women, and they're all creeped out by it, and he's changing duds. Just,
yeah.
How do we get to that? And I know it has to do... I'm sure it more or less has to do with the fact that Raimi didn't even want to do this film.
You know, there are some people that maintain that Tobey Maguire acting like that, it's his idea of what is cool, not necessarily what actually is cool. So it makes sense in context. But yeah, it's dumb.
I feel like they're really stretching to a point, though.
Well, yeah, it's dumb.
The thing is, if it's not clear in the movie,
yeah,
then it is just you coming up with... I like that idea, I do, but... It is, in a way, us just justifying whatever that is. And you go back to, like, Spider-Man 2, especially, like, that was great.
The best Spider-Man movie. Great. Still the best Spider-Man movie.
I don't know.
It is.
I like Homecoming a lot.
It's a second best Spider-Man movie.
I think it perfectly captures what Spider-Man is as a character, Sean.
But it has a lot of problems,
and narratively. And he's an actual teenage boy, young man.
But Spider-Man 2 is just a better movie.
They're both really great movies. And
one's better than the other, though.
We've done this before. But yeah, going from Spider-Man 2, and even Spider-Man 1, it doesn't hold up well, but it's still fun, and it still nails that character in a way. How did we end up with this in Spider-Man 3? Because you have to...
Yeah, it's a mismatch of what the studio wanted versus what the director wanted.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Raimi wanted, like, the Lizard or the Vulture in that one.
Yeah, and you can... going on to another superhero franchise, the X-Men movies. When Bryan Singer leaves after X-Men 2 and... Brett Ratner takes over. Yeah. I see. We all seen that gif. Yeah.
He's flipping that coat.
But when Brett Ratner takes over for X-3, X-Men The Last Stand, very, very noticeable shift in quality.
Do you feel like that movie could have worked in what Brett Ratner was trying to do?
Have you, no, not what he wanted to do. I don't know if you ever heard about what Bryan Singer wanted. He was just going to do the Phoenix saga. He wasn't, because X-3 it's this mixture of The Cure and the Phoenix Saga.
That would explain it, yeah.
It doesn't work.
Well, the Phoenix is like, that's like the climactic ending of that film, but it doesn't really seem that, it's just kind of sprinkled in when you have the space for it, because The Cure is the main part of the movie. And the Cure stuff itself isn't bad, especially considering what the X-Men is, and kind of that struggle of, I didn't ask for these powers, but they are who I am, so why should I have to change who I am?
Yeah, like, I have this way out now, but what's the right thing to do here?
Yeah, and...
Like, those are good questions that if you had a better screenwriter, you could have done something with.
And you think, like, what that franchise started out as, especially characters and who it focused on, you lose a lot of that in this movie. Like, Rogue, she's the main character in the first X-Men film, her and Wolverine.
Yeah.
obviously Wolverine's more popular. Like, you get a Hugh Jackman in there, everyone wants to see him as much as possible. But Rogue was a character in X3 that had something important going on for the main story, and you just kind of get it in like snippets, you know, like, because she can finally give up her powers and be able to, you know,
and she does
touch the Ashmore brother, whose name I can't remember. But,
and you know, there were two different endings to that filmed, one where she keeps her powers and one where she doesn't.
It almost seemed like she should have kept her powers.
Yeah, and she should have. I've seen the version where she does keep her powers.
But the thing is about that is it's never important in a way, because, like I said, you only see seconds of it each time, so you don't even care.
Yeah, and then it took a few movies for that franchise to kind of right itself again, and then it kind of went got bad again after another few movies.
Things were really looking up after Days of Future Past and First Class, though, weren't they?
Yeah, I remember those fun times of 2014.
Now we're just in that constant spiral of wondering whether or not we're going to get those last two they made.
Yeah.
They swear we're at least getting Dark Phoenix, but does it matter at this point?
No.
But I kind of want to see both of them. I actually really wanted to see New Mutants.
It would have been at least interesting.
It's insane to think that we got a trailer for that, and we were already supposed to have that movie, but we may or may not get it at all. I don't know. Going over more franchises that really just kind of...
I have one.
Oh, go for it.
As far as movies, Lethal Weapon.
Where he cuts off his mullet.
Well, you get to the third one, and I mentioned Flanderization earlier. That kind of happens with, what's his face, his character? Crazy guy?
Joe Pesci.
The crazy guy. Oh, Joe Pesci's one of them. He becomes like a main character. He pops up in the second one, but he's just kind of this joke character you see here and there. And then by the third one, he's like one of the main characters almost.
Well, yeah, he's driving the plot a lot in the second one. And he's actually, it's cool to see that character because just like Joe Pesci.
Mel Gibson.
I was talking about Joe Pesci, though.
I know. Crazy guy, though.
Oh, yeah, he's pretty crazy in his movies.
But by the third one, that's when he just really just becomes completely unhinged and not in a fun way. He's just, what are you doing?
Bulges his eyes a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just doing it just to, like, freak people out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and in the first one, you know, he's suicidal and all this and that. And by the time you get to the third one, it's like, who is this guy?
Yeah, well, the first and second one are so great with that character because they really bring to light his past and how it's affected him now and him trying to move forward. And it's tragic, especially in the second one where he does work on that. And then that girl just gets sent to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And it was nice in a way in the third one to kind of see him finally get a win. But I didn't like I don't even remember who played his eventual wife, you know, his girlfriend in the third movie. I never liked that character as much as I liked the girl from the second one. I really liked the girl from the second one and what they were doing with that. And it did pay off in a good way at that time to have her get killed. But yeah, to go forward from that. For me, I can still find enjoyment in the third one. I definitely see what you're saying with jumping the shark with number three and kind of just, he's not a character anymore. He's just...
he's an exaggeration of what he used to be.
Exactly. But that fourth one is just,
it's
in and of itself, no good. But yeah, I just... overall, I still enjoy that franchise, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the second one, I'd say the second one is just a solid 80s action movie.
It's still one of the best action movies. Yeah. Speaking of action movies that have really gone to shit, let's talk about Die Hard. Die Hard's crap.
I don't even like talking about Die Hard. See, I love the first Die Hard so much.
Yeah, how can you not? It's just a great film.
The thing is, whenever I think about that franchise, I usually only think about the first one.
I see, like, you know, because we collect DVDs and Blu-rays and all the stuff. We haven't upgraded 4K yet. We're not quite there.
Yeah.
But I see that whole collection on sale for like $15. And even then, I'm like, I only want the first one.
Yeah, and the first one's so great because it's this guy, the situation he's in is almost like, almost believable and not an over-the-top way. He's just this guy. He's sort of in shape. He maybe works out twice a week. He's a guy.
He's more instinct than anything.
Yeah, Bruce Willis, he's at any moment you believe he could die in this movie, and he's just barely getting by. He's walking on broken glass with no shoes. Yeah, and as it goes on, as the franchise goes on, he's the action hero that he wasn't meant to be in the first one.
Untouchable, can do anything.
That wasn't that character.
For me, because I've kind of gone back and forth on how much I actually enjoy the third one. Yeah. I don't remember two.
People say that's the other good one. It's the third one, but even that.
I don't think it's as good as one, obviously, but I could kind of see, like, yeah, this is at least, because it's different, you know?
Yeah.
The thing is about the second one, what I remember of it is just kind of, well, they like this in the first one. Let's just do this again. So you don't really... you lose the surprise and you're just like, well, there's not much here. But the third one at least does something a little new. The fourth one, Live Free or Die Hard, I think is what that one was called. That's the one where I remember just being absolute nonsense. And just, again, you lose that. You think while you're watching it, like, how did I get to this from what this first movie was? Yeah. And the moment in that movie in particular, because it's bad across the board. It's got like, it's very of its time, like very mid to late 2000s of hacking and isn't this cool, but it's not.
The swordfish era of movies.
But the one moment in that film that was plastered in all the trailers and was like their big action sequence was where he drives a cop car into a helicopter and jumps out of it right before it hits, like going 100 miles an hour onto a freeway and is perfectly fine. How do you get to that? And why would you think, being a fan of that
like,
first movie?
In a different universe, okay, but not in this, with what they set up in that first movie, no, that does not work.
Exactly. Like you always want to kind of add something fresh to a franchise, especially an action franchise that's been going on. Like you don't want to just do the same exact thing over and over again. But those core elements of this character being, I could be that guy in a way, or he's at least not, like you said, not much more in shape than I am. Like he's got the bad hair and everything. He's just not cool. He's just getting by. You, if you lose that, then you lose your whole story. And that's all that this movie is. And that's why they made one more after this. And he's got like a even cooler action son played by, what's his face? Who's that guy that Hollywood wanted to make happen? He was in Terminator recently. He's in Spartacus as well. He was the boomerang guy in Suicide Squad.
I know who you're talking about.
I know. I can't remember his name. I don't know. But they
who
didn't
cares?
He was in that movie. I don't care about him. I don't care about this movie. Really bad. I got like one more. And okay. Then, but if you want to go, if you got anything, and then we can maybe do into, or not do into, we can jump into another segment. We can jump the shark into another segment.
Okay.
You got nothing?
Yeah, other stuff that's jumping around in my head. Smallville, after Michael Rosenbaum leaves at the end of season 7.
Never saw that suit.
Plus,
in Full Glory.
Well, you do from a distance.
Not good enough, Sean.
Yeah, plus the budget gets slashed after that. I was thinking of some of the DC shows that are on right now, but again, it's kind of hard to like pinpoint a moment. Like with Arrow, you could say Felicity, but at what point?
Four.
Season four, but like at specifically what point?
I'd say coming back from, because it's so recent in my mind, the thing is about the first half of season four, it's better than the last half of season three a lot of the times. And even that mid-break episode where she gets shot, a lot of people joke about that now, like why couldn't have this stuck? But the thing is, that's an emotional episode all the way through.
And you didn't quite hate that character yet.
No, exactly. I like that character. I think a lot of people love that character in the beginning, even for what she was doing. But when they do come back, that, you know, she's paralyzed and the show becomes noticeably all about her and everything that anyone else does is wrong if she doesn't agree with it, even though she's nuking civilians.
Okay, you can maybe point to the nuking thing as the moment where it just got ridiculous. Because it is just like, you did something bad there.
Well, the whole sequence is just dumb where Damien Dark would have been the villain in that season, right? Yeah, so he wants to destroy the world and start new, and they've got the nukes going everywhere. And the part that gets me about, like, the joke about her character in the show overall is, I can hack anything to save the day. At one point, she literally, like, a nuclear missile, is charging at them. It's probably as close to you or as close to me as you are. And she hacks it with an iPad and sends it on a new trajectory, missing every single building in that city. And then it destroys another. You could have sent it anywhere, but instead you sent it to like
I think you're conflating two different moments, because the missile she sent to New Haven, something like that. It was like she could only send it to like one other place so she sends it to like a less populated area as opposed to Star City. That missile thing was another moment where like it was coming right at her and she hacks it. It was dumb.
But you know, bad CGI aside, which I expect from the CW, it's just, how do you get from a show like Arrow and what it was about this?
I could point to a moment in The Flash where it's like, we are The Flash. Those three words.
But Sean, we all are.
Yeah, we are.
What is the deal with that scene anyway? I know the joke, but like...
So, Iris is talking to Barry about how they need to be a team because she's better than he is and all this and that. It's like, you gotta remember, Barry, it's not just you out there. It's also us. We are the Flash. Some crap like that.
It's a lot of like, if you die, we all die in a way. Yeah. Like, no, it's just him.
It also came off that moment where, like, season three ends. He goes into the Speed Force to save the universe, basically, because, you know, the Speed Force needs a speedster in it. And then when he comes back in, like, season four, Iris gets upset. It's like, how could you just leave me? How could you do that? How dare you? It's like, I was saving the universe.
They go to counseling, right?
Yeah, it's like, I was saving the universe. Don't be mad at me for saving the universe.
If anything, you owe me dinner. The only reason we can go out to nice places and buy this house is because I saved the whole world. That show was good, too. What happened?
I don't know.
Still going to watch it, though, right? It's coming back.
Yeah, next month.
Mm. Grant Gustin wasn't at Dragon Con this year. I was hoping. Tom Cavanaugh was there, though, and I loved him. You figured that would be a jumping the shark moment, just replacing him with a different character every time?
He was annoying in season three, but all of his other versions I've been fine with.
He was like the schmucked drummer one, right?
Yeah, he was always twirling around this drumstick.
I still liked it just because Tom Cavanaugh's so good at like just.
You know, I was thinking about it the other day. Each of these shows have like a really good quality actor in it. With The Flash, it's Tom Cavanaugh. Like, you're better than what you're doing. Like with Legends of Tomorrow, it's Victor Garber.
I was about to say, yeah.
And Arrow probably has a good one in there. You know, the guy who played Deathstroke was probably a bit better.
Yeah, he's Australian. I can't remember his name. Yeah, he is good. You know, he was really good in Arrow. At least to me, at certain points anyway that I remember. The guy who played Raish was pretty good on the mountain fight in particular. That was like the high point of that show in a way. But yeah, I don't know. Who's the best actor in Black Lightning?
I'm good in Black Lightning. You need to watch Black Lightning.
They were, all of them were basically Dragon Con this year.
That's
I don't know
cool.
if you know, Sean, but I went to Dragon Con.
Oh, did you? Oh,
yeah,
oh, God.
We had a bit of fun. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Can't wait to see what the best part of Stargirl is.
The guy who plays, I don't know his name, but the guy who plays Tobias Well, he's really good in that show.
He was there too, yeah.
Yeah.
Ginchong, you could have met him. Could have been a dragon.
I had to work.
Think of all the dragons you could have conned.
Nah. I would have just talked about it and never flashed back to it because we don't have the budget.
If you did have the budget, you just have to like color grade it to a real like washed out sepia tone. We can go talk about it in the hallway after this if you want.
I need to talk to you about something. Do you mind? Can everybody clear the room? I need to talk to you.
That was another jumping the shark moment for me in The Flash. It was funny in a way, but that whole bit where it's like Barry had some new confidence because of powers or something, and everyone was so concerned that they each took a time to go talk to him in the hallway. There's literally a bit where I think Iris is like, they all look at her and she's like, don't worry, I've got it this time. Why? Why are you bringing him down? He finally feels like he could do some good and win the day. Why would you get in his head like that?
I don't know. You got anything else you want to throw in there?
No, I mean, we covered a lot, I think. Like I said, there's obviously a lot more instances of...
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of sitcoms that go on for more than a few seasons have them at some point.
There's one on this list that I don't even hate, but I could see again of how did we get here is The Robot in Rocky IV. Where did that come from? Again, it's not that it's bad.
I love
bad.
Rocky IV.
I do too. But again, it's not that it's bad. It's just...
It is when you look at the first movie.
The first three in a way. Yeah. Like
the first three is a little bit more ridiculous, but... Yeah.
There's no robots in it.
Yeah, when you get to four.
Great film, though. But that robot... That whole scene where they like introduce him and they play like the intense music and close-ups on him walking in. Oh, so good. So good. But yeah, I think that's
another franchise. There's only one bad movie in that entire franchise.
It's like, not even any of the later ones. Like it's
Rocky
five,
but even like Rocky IV, as ridiculous as it is, it's so good. So good.
Really good. But yeah, I think as far as, you know, I'm happy with what we've talked about.
We got some stuff out of this topic.
Definitely did. And I honestly wasn't sure what was going to happen.
Yeah. When we have these like freeform topics, you never know.
We really need someone to rein us in a couple times. But we're doing pretty good time. You want to go into one more segment real quick?
No, I was going to leave.
Oh. Well, bring my cat in here and we'll do it.
Okay. Now, what are we doing?
Well, Sean, it's that part of the show where we check stuff out.
I think Check It Out jumped the shark when Check It Von outs and left.
I'd argue and say it's when he showed up, but so like pretty much after the first episode. But he's here now, you think? He'll do another segment of the show?
No, he's on vacation in Guten Tag Land. He'll be back one day.
Good.
You don't know when, though.
I do love surprises. But Sean, it's that part of the show where we talk about what we've been reading, watching, and doing. What have you been up to?
I've been checking out a lot, Snoop. I did finish up Disenchantment.
Oh, okay.
It's overall? 10 episodes. I'd say give it a watch. It's it has a lot to improve on, but I think there's the potential for something really good in there. And if you do end up watching it, just kind of keep in mind that this is going to take a few episodes. It's about episode 5 is when it really started to like improve. So yeah, give that a watch. Why not?
Yeah, I'm glad you ended up coming around for you. There's nothing worse than dedicating what little time you have to a show that's just no good.
And it's only 10 episodes and half hour episodes, so not that big a thing you're going into.
It's like a full half hour though, isn't it? It's not like the regular 20
minutes. 28
minutes. Those extra 8 minutes though, Sean.
Yeah.
Whew. Whew. What else you been checking out?
Oh, I've been going to the movies and watching movies and movies and movies. I did watch this one movie on Netflix. It's a low budget movie, but watch it. It's called Happy Hunting. Basically, the plot is there's this alcoholic who he's on the run from some meth heads, and he goes into this town, and once a year, this town takes some of their less desirable citizens, so to speak, the alcoholics and the homeless and the whatnot.
The meth heads.
They take him out into the desert, and they're like, "Yeah, we're gonna hunt you guys." So it's kind of like the most dangerous game,
or with a bit of a black comedy twist.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay,
but it's a low budget movie, but I really liked it. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
So maybe watch that.
Happy Hunting, you say?
Yeah.
Anyone noticeable?
No.
And just a bunch of young bucks trying to get in the acting world.
Yeah, but watch it. It's good. I liked it.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't heard about that one. No. I really haven't checked out anything, if you can believe that, Sean. There's a couple things I'm ready to check out, though, that just got put up on Netflix. One of them, they just put the second season of The Good Place on there.
Mm-hmm.
I know I said it before. Really watch that show. I think it's one of the best comedies on television right now. So I'm excited to get into the second season. They're about to start the third season now. So I guess that's why they threw up the second season on Netflix. But yeah, it's the perfect time to go in, I think, just because it's super breezy.
Okay.
I think the first season was only maybe 14 episodes, maybe less than that. And it's not a lot. I don't think it's a standard 22, which that's a format that we've kind of.
Yeah, we don't do that as much.
Yeah, and I think honestly, shows like this are better for it.
Yeah, how they used to do it, especially for the first season, was you'd have the 13 episodes, and then if the show was received well enough, they would sometimes order what was known as a back nine, where you'd have 9 more episodes ordered, and they'd come back after the winter hiatus.
Okay,
and that'd bring it up to 22.
Yeah, yeah. I think I honestly think all shows should be kept to no more than 15, 16.
It depends on the show, but yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it's about 13 episodes each season, okay. So it's good, but it's still that standard 22-minute length.
Yeah, I'll check that out one day.
It's good. It's made by Michael Schur, who did The Office and Parks and Rec and stuff, so it's got that same, I think actually, I haven't watched the second season, but I think there's loose tie-ins to the Parks and Rec universe somehow.
I read about that.
So that's kind of interesting.
I finally got around to watching Christopher Robin. Not very good.
It's not as good as you want it to be. I think it's the main issue.
Driving home, I put my finger on what was the problem with it. Because I
think you should have kept your finger on the wheel, but...
No, my hands are all over the place, Snoop. That's why you shouldn't drive with me. But it's it attempts to please both younger audiences and older audiences at the same time.
I think the main issue for me is that with a movie like this, where you are taking a... something beloved from your childhood and trying to come back to it years later. It was actually in real time. This happened. And now Christopher Robin's and sad old British Ian McGregor, who's 40 or whatever. That's always an interesting idea. But when you do that, you have to bring that spirit and that magic of the original stuff.
Which they do here and there.
But they don't do it consistently, I think is the issue.
Yeah. And because I think they want, parents to be yeah, I remember this and this about Winnie the Pooh, but also be able to be yeah, I understand the situation this guy's in.
We all have to build luggage at some point.
And for kids, I don't think a kid would have fun with this movie is the thing. I don't think it's a very fun movie.
I don't think...
There are moments, when they're on the train platform and Winnie the Pooh's just pointing stuff out, why is he in the cage and all this. that was good, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When it's on, but it's just... You're always watching parts of it wondering, when are we going to get back to the parts I'm really enjoying?
Yeah.
they go to the Hundred Acre Woods for a bit, and it really comes to life when you catch up with the other like members of the gang, like your rabbit now and everything. Like that whole sequence of they don't recognize him because he's been gone so long, and he's trying to convince him that he is Christopher Robin. That's actually really good, I think. And Eeyore in particular has a really great moment.
That was
that
Brad Garrett.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect choice. I didn't even think about it, but yeah, like those moments are good. And Jim Cummings is Pooh.
When and he, Tigger.
Yeah, but more so Pooh. Yeah. When he's on screen, yeah, you're loving every bit of it. And I think the message at the end is, like, it's obvious. It's delivered well enough. And it's got enough heart in it at points. I think, like, I just don't think it has it all the way through. Nothing ever really lived up to the hype of that trailer.
Yeah, you see, if I was to do a Winnie the Pooh movie, I would just do the book. If you're going to do it live action, just have Christopher Robin as a kid. He's out there in the woods. He has all his stuffed animals, and he comes up with all this stuff.
You
just
know,
do that.
I like this idea of, again, revisiting it after years have passed and kind of they've lost sense of who they were, and it's for the worst. I almost would have had it a big part of it with him looking for the friends in the Hundred Acre Woods, because that's kind of how the movie starts, like Pooh. Yeah.
I've lost my friends.
Yeah. Yeah, and so he wants Christopher Robin's help to find him again, and then he does go back there, but mostly have it that like be that, like him looking and spending a lot of time with Pooh, like getting back to that original relationship.
And in rediscovering his old friends, he rediscovers his childhood. Rewrote the movie. Moving on.
I didn't hate it by any means.
Yeah, I didn't hate it either. It's just...
It looked good. I just never liked that point of Britain where everything's sad and gross. And
that's just Britain.
The only part of Britain we ever see on screen, as far as I'm concerned.
Even Paddington, which is set in Great Britain, that's a very cheerful, upbeat movie, but it's still raining half the time.
Well, that's why he's got that hat on. Yeah. He came prepared.
Also to protect his marmalade sandwiches, Snoop.
You tell me he's got one in the hat, just in
look,
case.
Look, we finally got to see one movie we've been trying to see forever. Mission Impossible Fallout.
I forgot I actually watched that, so I do have something to say. Good
yes,
for me.
I really liked it.
Yeah, this means more to you because you've actually watched these movies.
Yes, this is your first Mission Impossible movie.
I actually think I'm better off for not having seen. Like, I could have binged the other ones, right?
Yeah.
But I think that would have ruined this film for me because you've seen those movies over time. So you expect certain things and you do know those characters better, obviously. But if I had gotten to know those characters in like a few day span before seeing this movie, I would have been sick of all the tropes and sick of Tom Cruise. And I don't know. I feel like I had the thing is about this movie, if I was to, and you obviously know more, but I'd say if you were to go into any of these films blind, this might be one of the best to do.
Yeah, it doesn't, you don't need to see the others to watch this. I would also say, these movies, they kind of have the same plot, but this one has a very different feel to it. Even like the pacing and the timing of this one's different from the other ones. It was my favorite out of this franchise. Like, it's really, this is a franchise that never jumped the shark.
Not yet, anyway.
Yep.
I'm sure.
I really liked it. There's some really well, it's a long movie. It's 2.5 hours. You never really feel it, though.
There was, it's not even a complaint. It's just, I did notice it. Like, we were in a theater, just us, so I could talk freely. And I remember saying out loud at one point that it still had 50 minutes left.
Yeah.
But after saying that, it ramped back up in a way.
And when it slows down, it's not long. It's 20, 30 minutes. And it's just a moment for like the characters to calm down, and it's breathing room is all it is.
I think it needed, I think you're right. I think the pacing of this film is really great. Like, especially, a big part about these movies, the reason why people go see them is the action.
Mm-hmm.
The action in this film is really good.
Some of the best I've seen this summer. Like, this is one of my favorite movies of the summer. Just them jumping out of the plane. It's not just that it's good action scenes. They're intense. Like, them falling from the plane. The bathroom fight you see in the trailer is great.
That might be the highlight of the year for me.
There's some great hand-to-hand combat in that scene.
And it's cool to see. It's a three-person fight scene if you've seen the trailers. We've all seen that one exact trailer over and over again. But
if you've seen a movie at the theaters this summer, you've seen it over and over.
Yeah. But to watch, see it, you get to see three-person fight sequence. Already adding a third man in there makes it more interesting. But they all have distinct fighting styles.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to watch that and just using the environment. Like, some of them use the environment around them to fight. You got like a Henry Cavill, who's just a big hulking man. So he's just going to use himself to fight, tear his mustache off and throw it in his eyes. But that's really cool. And you pick up on it yourself. It's not like someone, it's not one of those like scene or sequences where you have an outside person in the film who's just like watching it on a camera and they're like, well, this guy's fighting like this, but this guy needs to fight like this. Like, it's none of that. You just pick up on it by watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's exhausting in a way because it's just action to action to action. Like, an action sequence will go into another action sequence and you don't even realize it until about like 10 seconds into the next action sequence that we're not slowing down.
But the movie did at the same time. I think the movie only takes place over a few days, maybe, if that. Because it starts off like they lose the plutonium and they got to get it back by this certain time. So it works for the movie.
Yeah, it's story-wise, it's pretty solid. There's a lot of, especially in the beginning, I think, there's a lot of exposition,
mm-hmm.
but it's almost overwhelming. Like,
I would say that with even the previous five, they are movies you have to pay attention to. You can't just have them on in the background.
Yeah, what I liked about this film, though, and I'm sure they, like you said, they do these in the other ones, is you have like the classic, you know, Mission Impossible thing where he gets the briefing and it's like, this is what's going down. You got to do this. If you don't do this in time, this will happen. Blah, 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 blah. Like, it's a long bit of that in the beginning. And I was lost because I just was trying to think, okay, he said he has to do this.
And it keeps going too. It's like, well, he's pretending to be this guy, and the actual guy's dead, but they're trying to get the face of this guy. And blah,
yeah,
blah.
It is
a movie. Yeah, if you don't pay attention to it, you will be lost.
And what's cool about that is I lost a lot on that bit, so I was thinking, oh no, I'm already in a bad spot.
Yeah.
But by watching it unfold, you realize what you pick up on what you didn't catch in the briefing. You're like, oh, they're doing this. This is what he meant. So yeah, I think it's all like very tight.
Watch the other five, and we'll do a Mission Impossible episode.
I am tempted now, yeah. But I don't think I'll enjoy them nearly as much as I enjoyed this. I really enjoyed this film, and I'm glad I finally got to sit down and watch it. It's been out for a while.
Yeah.
Still making money, though.
I still had to pay for it, too. Movie Pass.
Nerd.
Yeah.
but, yeah, pretty good. I forgot I watched that, so thanks. I feel like I've really been slacking on this segment, because I either don't have time to watch or do anything, or I've been watching the same exact thing, so I don't want to talk about them again.
Yeah.
But I guess for now, we'll let people go, because I don't really have anything else to say.
Nah.
Next
week, I was thinking we could do a summer recap almost.
Are you going to be able to?
That's what I was going to say. I don't know if I can do it next week, so we
scratching
might.
Your
so,
head?
We, so we might. Well, maybe next week. It depends. I'm going somewhere for a few days.
I'm fine with it. I like being the wild card in the podcasting world. Who's going to be on an episode next week? Maybe one day it'll just us turning the microphones on and leaving about an hour and a half of dead silence.
It'll still get the amount of downloads the same amount. So.
Good. But if we do come back next week and you guys want to listen to that, you can find it on iTunes and SoundCloud and Stitcher. If you guys wouldn't mind, if you have the time, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Sean, they can give us a star. They can give us more than one star if they want. They can also leave a little comment saying, like, I like this part of the show, but this part, not so much. Or, I don't like the show at all. They could do that. It's fine. Do one or the other or both. What else? We still have a letters page that I remember.
Yep.
If you wanted to send us a letter, do that. TheUnnecessaryGentleman@gmail.com. Tell us your thoughts. What's the thing that jumped the shark for you? But yeah, join us next week. Or the week when we come back
whenever
and do
we
a thing.
Come back.
Join us then. Until then, though. Bye, Sean.
Bye.